Dear Shooter, we know. We're a week late with all of the excitement from Atlanta. Cut us a little slack. We've been on the road, spreading knowledge, hate, and overall discontent. You know, the usual.
But they did state that when these guns are put together with different pieces or whatever, it's like an organ transplant.
Yeah, no. I got an F in shooting once.
It's a perishable skill.
Quitting?
Yes. My favorite death threat I ever got, the guy left his email address on.
He's just going to make it rain in Spanish, that's all.
Here's 20 cents. Wow, you just made that
clip weird. On. It's not a strap on.
2 weeks for all that? That isn't training, that's camp.
You couldn't read a brochure on all that shit in that time.
Prepare to enter the space where nothing is safe. Nothing is sacred, and offensive conversation is encouraged. Welcome to the Dear Shooter Podcast and your hosts, Jason Wilson, Brandy, and Jason Croteau.
Yeah, we're late.
Fashionably on time?
Something like that. Well, okay, to be fair. You were stuck in Atlanta for an extra 2 days, so we missed our normal day to record, and by the time you got back, we wouldn't have gotten this up in time.
No, this is true.
And then I turned around and left for Colorado for 4 days. So, sorry. We're late, guys.
That's right. They'll forgive us. As long as you get it posted on time.
Yeah, well, always a challenge. No, so... I don't know. Where do we start? Do we start with all of the adventures?
Let's start with the fun stuff on the floor and work our way to the members' meeting and then forward.
I am all for that.
Okay. I didn't get to spend much time on the floor, so you guys are going to have to help me out here.
Oh, my God. We saw some things.
Now, tactical underwear.
Yes.
It has a pocket.
It has a pocket.
What?
She found tactical underwear. It was concealed carry underwear.
For him or her?
Both.
Tell me you guys bought a set.
No.
Should have, but
should
didn't.
Have.
I wouldn't wear that shit.
Why not?
Dude, seriously.
You're always complaining about pockets. You don't have any, and the ones you do have are ornamental.
Well, I guess those wouldn't be ornamental now, would they?
Well, I'm curious how they call that a tactical pocket, because... That is, like, way concealed.
It seems to be right in front of what you guys call the, like, little flap thing.
It's appendix.
Yeah, it's right in front. So
that's
does
not
that
an
save
exactly
you?
Very common draw stroke.
No, but you... But, okay.
Well, it depends on what you're
doing. I think somebody watched a little too much Archer back in the day and finally went, hey, we need an underwear gun.
Huh.
But we need a way to carry it. So...
It made more sense when he said it.
Right? Yeah, so the underwear gun. I forgot about the underwear gun. Yep.
So, all right. The NRA show typically is not the place for shenanigans and stuff like that. It's usually very conservative, very straightforward industry, right? What was the Oompa Loompa doing?
I'm not sure because I actually didn't catch that one till the last... day we were on the floor and I caught the back of
who in full regalia too. I mean, the leader hosted the pink hair and the
and
whole
what booth was that at? I know what you're talking about. I can't remember the booth.
I saw a photo of it in front of Springfield.
That's right. Yeah.
I don't think he was with Springfield.
I don't think he was. I saw him several places, but I think he did belong to a booth. I just don't know which one.
Or he was in the wrong show. Whatever.
Could have been.
But I still found it interesting. That's not the NRA show. You see stuff like that at SHOT Show.
Well, because Vegas.
Yeah, and it makes sense there. Nobody really, gets all excited to take a picture with the Oompa Loompa at SHOT Show. But in Vegas, it made sense. In Atlanta, I was confused.
Well, there was a lot of things that confused us in Atlanta. And we'll get to that. Brandy and I's nice evening stroll in downtown. That was fun.
That was after show.
That was after show.
That was your adventure.
Oh, it was an adventure, all right. I mean, it should have been on National Geographic.
Oh, geez.
So we go out. We have a nice dinner. We found a really nice restaurant right next to the hotel. It was brilliant. It was this wood-fired grill place.
Nice.
And we decide, it's still light out. Let's go walk around, walk off dinner. And the first thing I see is a guy, black guy, in work boots and a lime green sundress.
Huh.
And, okay, whatever. We start walking and we get like six blocks down and we realize there's some kind of a prom going on.
Oh, yes, it was prom week.
Young kids in beautiful gowns, tuxes, everything, getting pictures taken in front of the homeless. It was brilliant. And then we turn around, we figure out, and we find out that this guy in the lime green dress is following us.
Oh, wait, I got to back you up. Okay, so you've got folks out and about, and they're taking selfies in front of the homeless.
Oh, no, it was professional.
There was a photographer there, so either they're going to use AI, or those are great memories for later, y'all.
What a backdrop.
Oh, yeah.
I've never, ever, ever thought, hey, you know what? It'd be cool if we had a photo with homeless in the background.
Well, I just don't think you can. It, you know, it's like Yellowstone and an antelope. You can't get away from them. You don't get to see.
That is so wrong. Okay, sorry, I derailed.
Oh,
sorry.
No, but yeah. So the lime green dress followed us like we did what, a mile?
But I wasn't scared because I could outwalk that. It was on some sort of substance.
Uh-huh.
There was no way. You didn't have to run. And he talked to himself, so you didn't have to get into any conversation either.
All right.
Which goes back to the first time I went to Atlanta for the NRA show. I actually was on the same plane and sat next to Ken Hackathorn. And this was back before he actually retired. And I remember when we landed, he turned and looked to me and he says, "Well, welcome to Mogadishu. I hope you brought your blaster." And I went, "Wait, what?"
That's a great line, especially as you're exiting a plane.
Yeah. Fortunately, I had.
That's awesome.
I kind of lucked out this time because I have friends in Atlanta and I'm like, "Hey, I don't want to fly with a gun. Can you hook me up?" Yep.
Yeah, that is handy.
But yeah, no, walking the show, yeah, the Oompa Loompa. The one that stuck out to me, and this was a company, let me look it up here, Black Steel. And they had this grip control thing. So what it is, it replaces your takedown pin in your handgun.
Okay.
And it's a folding shelf for your thumb.
Just in case you forgot what to do with your thumb?
Apparently. So it's the argument is, and apparently they all hyped this up because it was created by an instructor. And it's supposed to give you more positive control of recoil management. And I thought, yet another gimmick to try and fix a training issue mechanically.
Did you hold one?
I did. And quite honestly, I felt it was in the wrong spot.
Well, they're assuming people's thumbs are the same length.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to tell you that they're not. I mean, I am definitely thumb challenged.
Well, yeah, especially when you cut the tip off.
Well, it is shorter than most. Regardless,
you're
of
not supposed to circumcise the thumb.
It was practice.
Oh, no, not even going there. But that was one of the things I saw, and it was just there were several that I saw, and it's all these gimmick products that are trying to fix training issues. Is this where the industry's going?
Why don't they just do training and not have to buy the gadgets?
Well, I'm with you. But it goes back to, people don't know what they don't know, and they think, oh, this is cool, and an instructor figured it out, so it must be right.
So I've been in product development for more than a minute. And about twice a day, I get a phone call of, hey, you know what would be neat if you'd make? I should have been writing this stuff down over the years just as a sheer guilty pleasure to read later. But
it'd make great podcasts.
Yeah. There is a lot of stuff, and it comes and it goes and it comes and it goes. And we always cycle back to its irrelevance. But they sell.
They do sell.
A metric ton.
I know.
Of the novelty, it'll make you better, gimmicky gadget.
And I can't tell you how much of this stuff I see come through my classes, and usually by midday, the students ripping it off their gun because they realize...
It's in the way.
It's in the way. It doesn't work the way it's supposed to when you learn to shoot properly. And the bullet drop compensator is the big one.
The bullet drop compensator.
Yes, those reticles that have the bullet drop compensator in them.
Oh, you mean the ones that are like specific to a round?
Yep.
Oh, absolutely. Now, in a very isolated or circumstance, they work just fine.
In the same place with the same ammo and the same gun, they work great.
Very, very isolated. It's a specialized thing.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you get too crazy from that very specialized thing, they work okay. But in the real world...
Oh, you mean where we live?
Yeah. they don't work at all. They're pretty. And a lot of thought went into them. Here's the problem with it. There's an engineer somewhere that really spent hours.
Oh, yeah, doing the math.
And obsessed over the details of where to put what line. And very thoughtfully crafted this thing from a almost art project standpoint based on math.
Mm-hmm.
And lost sight of the fact that it's an accessory that's supposed to go on multiple firearms.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple platforms, shoot multiple firearm and projectiles. Engineers that get tunnel vision about the task at hand and forget that their products are multi-use.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting product for its one use.
Right.
But very rarely is that the use it's going to be put on.
Well, and it's kind of the same thing as, and there's a lot of scope companies doing this where, oh, you know, send us your data and we're going to develop a band that goes around your elevation turrets where you can just turn it to the yardage. Same thing, you know, because they'll come to my class from Tennessee. Well, you just gained 5,000 feet, dude. Ain't going to work.
Nah, you're going to be a little high.
Yeah.
Air's a little thinner here.
A little bit.
But these are things that, quite honestly, are not your novice or rookie detail.
Mm-mm.
They have a hard time actuating the trigger the same way every time.
Yeah, had
that
this
weekend. But
they
bought the gadget hoping to fix a training problem. When really, if they just spent some time with the rifle and sent some rounds downrange, they realized they didn't need that.
Right.
Anyway, Atlanta.
Atlanta. I got to fulfill a bucket list item. I got to go to the Atlanta, the Georgia Aquarium.
Yes.
That was awesome.
That was cool. That was very, very cool. The beluga whales.
Yeah, and usually you go to the gift store to shop and have a good time, but we had to go to the gift store to get your contraband back.
Oh,
God.
Tried to take a weapon into an aquarium.
He did.
Sorry.
I don't go fishing with a knife. I mean, that's a rod and a hook thing.
I don't know. Muscles. Take a knife.
I didn't see any muscles.
I didn't either, but, you know, I was paying attention to the sharks.
Okay, you might need a knife with that.
You might have a chance.
Yeah, I stand corrected.
No, and I didn't even think about it. You know, it's the everyday thing, you know, flashlight in one pocket, knife in the other, wallet, watch, spectacles, testicles, all this, you know. And we're walking, and I get up, and I'm, oh, crap, there's a metal detector. So I get pulled aside. Thankfully, they were nice enough that they're like, it happens. We know you're here for the NRA show. We expect this. Here, put it in a bag. You can pick it up as security on your way out. Thank you.
That was actually quite nice.
I thought it was, too. And it's not like, I would appreciated the fact like they didn't charge me extra for that.
Well, they could have. Some places do.
They absolutely could have. But they were very nice about it, and I appreciated that. So thank you.
Well, if you're ever in Atlanta, go see the aquarium. It's worth going and doing.
It's way cool. And you know, one thing I actually kind of missed this year, and I looked for it, but I didn't see any protesters.
I didn't see any protesters either. And I was around quite a bit from building to building, hall to hall. I didn't see any protesters at all.
I was kind of shocked because every time I've been to NRA, there's been a protest. Usually it's pretty weak, but...
Yeah, if there was one, they sequestered them and they didn't hang out in public areas. Hmm. So, no, I didn't see them. I did find my one novelty I was looking for, just to perversely look at it. Somebody has made a magnetic optic mount for pistols.
Wait, what?
Yep. It's magnetic. So it's a very specialty plate that goes onto your pistol. It replaces the rear dovetail of where your rear sight goes. And it is a pretty fairish chunk of steel. Now, the optic itself has a plate on it that is a rare earth magnet.
Okay.
I wanted to see how strong that thing was, because, I mean, it's pretty violent, the recoil on a pistol.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even 9mm, it's sharp, it's fast, it's violent. And as suspected, with a little bit of side-to-side motion, the thing separated from the pistol pretty easy. Straight in line, it was pretty strong. Not convinced you still wouldn't be having an optic in the forehead shooting. But any kind of side-to-side pressure.
Oh, yeah.
But so you put it in a concealed carry holster, and if you have a muffin top like I do, your optic fell off somewhere and you didn't even know what happened.
Right.
And it's just a novel idea. Technology's not quite there yet. And what situation are we in where we have to change that optic enough so it has a quick change magnet for it?
The only application I can see is if you're doing demo products at like an indoor range trying to decide which optic did you want. Yeah, that something like that would be handy.
That would not be a firing situation. And I can see from a display standpoint, yeah, that makes sense. But from a intended to use it in a live fire situation, no. I couldn't endorse that whatsoever.
So before we move on, I saw one other thing at the show that I absolutely had to take a picture of. Because we've talked about it here, because you came out with the world's first reflex optic in blue.
Correct.
And the science behind it is just insane, because we see it better in everything else. I'm not going to throw the company under the bus, but I will give you their slogan. It says, "The green is the new red. Eyes see green better."
Yep. Well, and that slogan's not horribly wrong. Yes, green has taken favor in some circles. I know exactly who you're talking about. And they've started out in the laser space.
Right.
And they cut their name on the green laser.
Mm-hmm.
From a branding perspective, sure. That color makes sense for them.
And I'm not saying that you don't. It's necessarily wrong. For the simple fact that I know I pick up a green dot faster than anything else. But when we start talking about the actual science behind it, the way our eyes work, it's not quite true.
Well, in the spectrum of light, I'm going to geek out on you for a second. Green and red are really close to each other,
right,
in wavelengths.
Right.
And so,
which is why they don't have to change lens coatings.
Yeah, they're using the same off-the-shelf lenses. They changed an LED, and it works pretty well. Kudos to the guy that figured that out, because it was smart. You can pick up green in daylight a little faster, a little easier. Straight up, can. But blue, it works better with night vision. It doesn't have the vibratory nature that red does.
Mm-hmm.
There's an emotional issue there. And it, the list goes on and on and on about the benefits of why that one. Now, for years and years, the spectrum was so far apart, the coatings didn't work.
Right.
And so bringing that out was kind of a point of pride for me because I've been working for that for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't easy. And getting a supplier to actually make a batch of lenses, I had to buy more lenses than I'll ever use. But I got it done because it needed done.
Right.
Yeah, take a look at a blue optic. They are better.
All right. So before we move on to more technical aspects, I just realized we're like halfway here.
Oh, geez.
If you haven't tried 10th Mountain Whiskey, can you even call yourself a shooter? Okay, Mr. AK guy that only drinks vodka. 10th Mountain has that too. Still too much? Maybe that cordial would suit your unrefined palate. But for you real pipe hitters out there, the single malt can't be beat. Whiskey is an acquired taste. And if you don't like whiskey, I suggest you acquire some taste. Just enter Dear Shooter at checkout for 15% off your order. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. It's whiskey worth fighting for.
Are you fed up with paying premium prices for mediocre performance? It might be time to up your game with Lucid Optics. Lucid Optics delivers world record-setting performance without breaking the bank. From long-range precision, hunting application, and the first-ever reflex optic in blue, your mission won't be compromised. Lucid Optics are built tough as nails for the most demanding situations, using ED shot glass to ensure your view is crystal clear and backing it up with a lifetime warranty. To learn more, ask your dealer or go to lucidoptics.com. Lucid Optics. On target. Under budget.
All right, so if anybody doesn't know at this point that you have been elected to the board of directors of the NRA, if you don't know that, get out from under your rock. But from your perspective, like, you were running around in meetings and all kinds of things, and how did that go? I mean, we got the public perspective of it, but what can you tell us? You know, can you pull the curtain back a little bit, Mr. Oz?
Well, I'll back up and talk to you a little bit about why the group that I got put into chose to join, whatever we want to say about it. The NRA 2.0 folks are a group of reform candidates.
Mm-hmm.
The entire mission here is to right the ship at the NRA. We have let that organization overall almost bounce to the point where it was on the fringe of going away. There was some leadership that did some very nefarious things, and they have to go. So running a slate of 26 candidates is a big undertaking, and getting 19 of those elected is even kind of a bigger undertaking. With all that being said, we, as reform candidates, now have the controlling interest in the votes. We can steer the ship in the right direction. At the board meeting, they hold elections for the president every year, and we were able to remove Bob Barr, which was a step in the right direction. He was one of the old cronies. And these guys, they've been there for some of them excess of 40 years in the leadership role at the NRA. And while it's good to have consistency, it's also toxic and corrosive to the organization as it grows and evolves. We just managed to come through the backside of a pretty nasty lawsuit from the New York AG. And I got to tell you, the judge in that case has been exceptionally reasonable, but tough at the same time. What they really want to see is membership information get disseminated to the members. So transparency is a big issue. They want to see the NRA police itself from a compliance standard for most 501c4s, right? You can't just pay board members an exorbitant amount of money to go on speaking tours and this, that, the other. I don't necessarily think that if you're doing speaking engagements professionally, that you shouldn't be paid. But if you're going to hold a board seat, that causes a conflict in a lot of ways. So we've kind of eliminated the ability for a board member to accept funds in that way. If you're going to accept funds from the NRA, you need to step away from your board seat.
Well, and you and I kind of looked at some of the lists, and I'm not going to sit here and throw people under the bus or anything, but there was a lot of names that were put on that list that were legitimately paid by the NRA. One of the things that stuck out to me was recruiters.
Right.
You know, they get paid a percentage of a membership fee. So if you look at how much they were paid, you have to multiply that by like 95% to get what the NRA got out of that.
So, that's correct.
So they were not, you know, while they, yes, they were getting paid by the NRA, they were getting paid a very small percentage of a membership fee as a recruitment stipend.
Right, and that's kind of where I was going with the next comment on this is those types of things are an unfair assessment of a board member taking funds.
Mm-hmm.
Pete Brownell, when he was president, the NRA bought a bunch of gear from Brownells online, and they made money with that gear.
Right.
They used it for the shooting sports. It had to come from somewhere.
Right.
Right? Larry Potterfield,
mm-hmm.
right? He never got on the board, but Midway USA has made a absolutely metric ton of money off NRA membership.
But at the same time, because of their Roundup program, they have given to the NRA a massive amount of funds.
Absolutely right. So it's hard to demonize the good folks and actually scrutinize the guys that were just on the take.
Right.
One of those happened to be Marion Hammer. Now, she was the first woman president of the NRA in history.
Mm-hmm.
She did a lot of good things for the NRA back in the day. But the longer you sit in that seat from the executive side of things, first vice president, second vice president, president, executive vice president, all of those guys, the longer you sit in that seat, the more entitled your mindset becomes because they prop those folks up and make them very important.
They do.
And they are. They do good works. But the mindset of I'm entitled to it is where it starts to become a problem.
Right.
The AG wants us to police ourselves a little bit better and manage that back to fiscal responsibility, which we can get there. We have to get through some of the restitution portions of the NRA lawsuit results. So Wayne has to pay a whole big fine back before he's off the hook. And he started making those payments, and he's going to get it done. So he is going to, you know, clear his name and get out of that piece of it. But he's out. He's no longer part of the organization. And for all of those out there that was claiming upside and down that you would get back and support the NRA, if Wayne was gone, well, Wayne's gone. It's time. Come back.
And we did. Brandy and I upped our membership. We're now endowment members. So, you know, we made
Thank
good
you.
On that. Because that was one of the things that was my intention when we went to Indy like 6 years ago when all of this originally blew up. Like, every time I go to the NRA, it's like I do something. And that was what we were going to do that time, was we were going to up our membership. And we got there, and then, of course, everything blew up. And we kind of looked at each other and went, not another dime until we get this figured out.
And I've been working with the board members and the folks in the foundation for years and years and years. And I remember when they first brought Oliver North to the NRA. They wanted him to be president. They remember the days where Charlton Heston, and that was the good golden age of the NRA in recent history.
Right.
So they wanted someone that was very recognizable, that was very eloquent and well-spoken, that had been through the grinder with congressional hearings and held his own. And so this guy fit the bill almost perfectly, right?
Right.
The problem with it was, at the time they approached him, he had a contract with Fox News for a whole lot of money. And the only way you were going to get him is if you bought him out of his contract. Well, the NRA can't do that properly, right? They don't have the ability to write a check like that and buy a guy's contract out. So they brokered a deal with ADMAC to hire him as a celebrity speaker, which bought him out of his contract and allowed him to get into the board side of things, And they did it in such a shady backroom kind of deal. That's what kind of started this whole thing back when, right? Membership got a hold of it, and now the trust is eroded from a financial side of things. And they look deeper, and they find out the private jets and the vacations and the expense reports on suits and things for Wayne. And it just got worse the more you looked at it.
Right.
And most folks, they hear a soundbite, and they take off and run, and their hair is on fire, right? You know, they got the pitchforks out, and they got the torches, and they're wanting a whole total entire regime change. And they're not wrong. That stuff was not okay. We're fixing it. We're moving forward. And this organization needs to heal. While we learn from the lessons of the past, we need to start working towards putting it behind us.
Mm-hmm.
And that means, you know, not rehashing it every time we get a chance. That means taking a look at the work that the board is doing today as the transparency thing comes up. There was a resolution made in the board meeting that promotes a new information portal to be developed both in documents you can retrieve and websites that you can get information from that will have chat and blog opportunities. And the guy that's going to oversee that is, well, there's two of them. John Fraser is the secretary. He's the gatekeeper of the information.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Messenger, which is our compliance officer. Now, the interesting thing about the compliance officer is he's not really beholden to the NRA or the AG. He's put in place to make sure we stay on track and has made huge improvements at the NRA from if you feel like something is not going like it should, say something to him.
Right.
He'll look into it, and he does. He looks into every single one of those types of complaints. And if they fall outside the bounds of the purview of the NRA, he gets it corrected. Sometimes that's a firing. Sometimes it's a reprimand in writing. But he gets it corrected. And so we're having mechanisms put in place where the NRA can get back on track.
And I think that, especially your website, I think is going to end up being huge, because I think that was a big problem for the members and why there was such a decline in membership after that Indy meeting, because we knew what was, like, we had the inkling, we started to gather the evidence of what was actually going on at the NRA, but the members themselves really kept in the dark for several years until it all came out with the New York trial.
Right.
And I think that's what the members are really looking for is we want to know what our NRA is doing.
Right.
What, you know, and I think that seeing what the NRA is doing, seeing what they're, you know, how they're pushing the Second Amendment, it'll get members more engaged.
It will. But you also, if you're pragmatically looking at it, I'm 52. Me joining the board brought the average age of the board members down by 20 years.
Yep.
I sat next to a guy named Knox.
Mm-hmm.
And Knox is 25, lawyer, smart. And so we collectively brought the average age of the NRA board down by half.
Right.
Communication in the digital form was not the previous board's strong suit.
No.
I mean, we're talking about folks that have their grandchildren come over and change the clock on their VCR because they still have one.
Oh, my God.
Right? This is the age of those folks. So, yes, we are making those changes. The communication's going to come up. But the thought process never was, until now, of how to reach out to members.
Right.
You know, the go along to get along and yeah, trust us, it'll be fine. Those days are gone.
Yeah, it doesn't work anymore.
You, if you are interested at all, reach out to John Fraser at the NRA and ask any question you'd like. And if you don't get an answer or if you don't get a satisfactory one, there is a directory of all the board members and they have their phone numbers and their emails listed. Pick one, ask the questions. And go down the list until you find somebody that actually understands what's going on. You got to remember, the NRA has 180 programs
mm-hmm.
outside legislative action and lobbying for the Second Amendment.
Yep.
All of those board members are in the committees doing works for all those programs. They may not be intimately in tune with all of the details of your question. you may have to get a couple board members before you actually get a good answer.
But do they know who's on what committee, or is the committees listed anywhere?
Yeah.
So you could at least
they're
start
in the directory.
With
the committee assignment is listed, yes.
And I think that should be good. And I would encourage you, especially if you're a current member or if you're thinking about coming back, be involved, because that was, I think that's going to help. You said that the NRA needs to heal, and I think a big step forward in that is going to be communication between the members and the board.
Right.
And if you want changes, pay attention and vote.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Get involved. We're living in an age where if you can't reach out and grab someone's attention from, I don't care what kind of sound bite you got, you had a second and a half to grab them before they swipe right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you grab their attention, you have 12 seconds to deliver your message.
Right.
Or they swipe right and you're gone. You've lost them. They're not coming back. So reaching that demographic, we've always talked about how youth's a big deal. Well, the Gen Z are going to be the next guys to step in line and get involved. We have to cater them, and we have to make sure they understand what the world really looks like.
We do, but on the flip side, and I would encourage people as members, you know, don't be afraid to ask the question, but be respectful, because people are not going to respond to hate mail. They're just not.
And I've got a guy blowing up my phone ever since I got on the board, and his approach and
You're
the
welcome.
Way he goes and does things makes me say you don't want to answer him at all. I'm obligated to, but I will take my time and craft my message so he can't use my words against me, and that takes a minute. So I apologize for the delay.
Yeah, well, you're a captive audience right now, and I'm going to hammer you.
All right, let's go.
I'm kidding.
But your delivery, your approach,
it's huge.
Really makes a big deal. Remember when Grandma used to say, "You'll catch more flies with honey than vinegar"? It couldn't be more important right now than anything else. So yes, be nice.
No, and I would encourage everybody, you know, if you have a legitimate question or a legitimate concern, contact a board member, but just say, hey, you know, look, I was looking at this and help me to understand. And I think you're going to get a much better response with that kind of approach than, hey, I saw this and what the hell are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Think about how you would respond to that.
I'm actually in a place as a freshman board member, I don't honestly understand a lot of the why things were done. And I'm learning Robert's rules to figure out that if you're really skilled at Robert's rules, because you have to conduct a business meeting in that, or it's not legal,
mm-hmm.
There are mechanisms where people, if they don't want discussion on something, they're trying to hide something, they can bury it in procedure.
Right.
And there's no way for it to see the light of day. And it's wrong.
It is wrong.
But it's mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
So we're stuck between that rock and a hard spot.
Right. It's going to be a long road. So be patient. That's all I can really say, because, like you say, with Robert's rules and the procedural hoops that you guys have to jump through, these things do take time. I wouldn't expect significant changes probably until the annual meetings next year.
Right. Well, and we're going to work all year to make it so the meetings are a little bit more friendly. There were some shenanigans that happened at this annual meetings. The very first resolution brought to the floor was bordering on toxic.
It got a little spicy.
But the way that it was written and the way that it was proposed, it was going to be a problem from the outset.
Well, it didn't conform to the bylaws. So those
Correct.
Need to be addressed.
Correct. Now, procedurally, it had to be sent for a review
mm-hmm.
to the bylaw committee.
Right.
Before you could really even discuss the meat and potatoes of the actual resolution. To the general membership, that sounds like we're pushing it to committee, it's going there to die.
Right.
Like we're dodging. But legally, we couldn't discuss it the way it was until there was a bylaw review.
And that was one of the things you talk about, Knox. He got up and he actually said that. I mean, but Brandy and I were sitting in that meeting, because that was the members' meeting.
Right.
And he got up and he very eloquently explained, look, it has to be this way to be legal and to make it right. Because the way it was presented, you're exactly right. It wouldn't have gone past the bylaws. It wouldn't have conformed. So it couldn't be implemented the way it was written. And he even expressed, you know, look, I don't disagree. This, we need to do this, but it has to be done right.
Correct, or it won't stick.
Right.
And a lot of the members didn't understand the process, and they got up and left because they didn't feel like their voice was being heard. On the outset, I don't blame them necessarily. However, they were being heard, and anything brought up in the members' meeting, anything, even if you adopt the resolution in the members' meeting as this is something the voters of the NRA want, it is being referred to the board for action.
Mm-hmm.
So the members' meeting, no matter what you do, it's being referred to the board.
Right.
So if it's brought up in the members' meeting, the board has to deal with it. And we were there till 3 a.m.
Oh, I know.
And dealing with a lot of that stuff.
And I'm sorry, I had to leave. Number one, I had to feed Brandy or she was going to kill somebody. I had another meeting I had to go to.
Yeah, and we got a lot of traction done. The NRA's in trouble. Coming back out of this lawsuit is going to be nothing short of a miracle. But we're trying to find ways to make common ground, to get the implementations of the things that have to happen done legally. And that's, can't say that strong enough. It has to be legal.
Right.
Just because we want doesn't mean we're going to get right away. So the wheels turn slow for a reason, and I'm learning these reasons, and Robert's Rules is a big chunk of it.
Well, and you said something, and it was a meeting that the members weren't really privy to, but you stood up in one of the board meetings, and this kind of goes back to you were talking to the average age of the board members now, and you talked to them about training, about how there's all these NRA trainers, and none of them are teaching NRA's curriculum.
Yeah, that happened in a committee meeting. It was a membership committee meeting, and they wanted to talk about publications and promotions and give every member a box of ammo to bring them back. I mean, they're missing it.
They are.
And they wanted, well, trainers. And who's the one guy that you listen to? You're going to go to a training with a guy. You paid money to hear his opinion on things. You're going to listen to what he has to say, right? Every municipality, government agency, whatever, has a very checkbox item that says you got to be NRA certified to teach.
Right.
Right? So all the trainers I know are certified NRA, but they're not teaching that curriculum because it's antiquated and out of date.
Yep.
And so the second that they get a class, they go right into the good meat and potatoes of a qualified education curriculum.
Right.
It's not NRA. It may have a basis and an undertone there.
A lot of it doesn't anymore.
Right. So the trainers are one of the front lines. We got to get those guys back, give them the power to be able to help the NRA update.
Mm-hmm.
And once we can get that process moving, we can get back on track with giving good information out. And members will come back once you give them value and a reason for them to come back.
Right. And that's the big thing. Members need a reason to get behind the NRA again. And it's got to be more than just, you know, being in the courtroom fighting for the Second Amendment.
We do really, really well during panic times.
Yes.
We are not facing panic times. So the challenge of gaining membership back is harder. We have to be honest and make the changes within the organization. And we're working on it. It's just going to be slow.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's basic. That's just how things work. But I'm encouraged with what I saw. I did see a lot of the board itself going, okay, the members are making themselves heard loud and clear, and if we don't act on this, there will be torches and pitchforks. And I think a lot of them, that message came across, and I'm encouraged of what we're going to see in the next year.
Yeah, we did a lot of good works in the actual board meeting that addressed all of those things that were brought up in the members' meeting. And there will be action taken on every single one of them.
And one thing that I'm really encouraged about is we're now in a time where the Second Amendment isn't just absolutely under attack from every direction, which gives the NRA a little bit of breathing room to clean house before we have to go back to battle.
You can't rest on your laurels, but yes, we can put our focus into some of the foundational structures that have gone old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, no, that, I mean, that was Atlanta. It was fun. I don't Did you get a count on how many people were there? I mean, I'm guessing 35, 40,000, somewhere in there.
72.
Okay, I didn't see all of them.
72,000 people signed up and went in the door.
That's because you were at Bain's booth.
Which was empty, by the way.
I find it funny they made him get a booth.
Well, he told me that they have him, they've given him a booth for next year already. So he is, he's going to get, what did he tell me? A potted plant, a cat box with kitty litter, a coffee pot, and something else.
Can we get a fat head of him?
We should get a cutout.
Yep.
Yep, cardboard
cutout. We need to get one. We need to find a picture of him and have one made.
I might have one of those laying around.
Because that would be funny, just to put it in his booth and don't tell him about it.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So if you were there, I hope you guys had fun because we had a good time.
It was good. It was a different meeting for me.
We did. We did get to end it. We got to go to a fairly exclusive concert. We got to go to Big and Rich, which was a lot of fun.
Cowboy Trey was the best part.
He was the best part. And as I put you in an Uber to go back to the hotel, and I was invited to a relatively exclusive cigar party.
Yes.
And as I'm walking down the street to go to this bar, I walked like the last block and a half with Cowboy Troy. And so we got to party with Cowboy Troy for a little while. And
he gets bigger in person.
He's a big boy. I would not want to tangle with him.
No.
But the cigars were good. The company was good. You know, got to hang out with some really cool people and then get on a flight at 5 o'clock in the morning. after you kept me out till 1.
Yeah, so Jeff Knox and I were in an elevator and going to the board meeting. And he goes, well, when did you get in last night? And I said, oh, it was late, like 3. And he looks at me and goes, are you retarded? You have work to do today. I said, I know. I'm young and dumb. And we laughed, ha ha ha. And after the board meeting, he wanted a whiskey and a cigar. So I was out with Jeff until the security dog of that whole complex started walking around. And that was like 2 a.m. the robotic security dog. We took pictures of it from a distance because I had no idea what it was capable of. But, and then the next morning, I got to ask him if he was retarded. It was fun.
Yeah, well, that was like your third night going till like 3 a.m. Yeah. Because if I'm not mistaken, when you guys left the cigar party, you guys went back and drank more.
We did. Yep. I was with Josh Tunnison and the guy from Acme Machine. Interesting guy, by the way.
Yes.
Maybe. We'll see more from him. I got to call him tomorrow.
Good. Doing some cool work. So, I mean, we're like way the hell over time here. So I guess until next week, we don't get to blame the NRA anymore. So back to blaming your gun.